All right, so Samach Bov Amar Aleph, three lines from the end of the narrow lines. Amar of Yosef, Amar of Yosef, Amar Rehoda Amar Rab. Hiskin Rebbe Besodri. Rebbe made a takana in the field, like in the little towns in the field where not everybody is Bnei Torah. And on the side over here, it brings a girsa from Rishonim, Bisvodis, which I guess is the name of the place. Anyway, he made a takana like this. We have to remember, we've been learning off and on throughout the Masechta that you have 7 days of Nida and 11 days of Ziva. And what you have is, when there's bleeding during the 7 days of Nida, doesn't matter how long it lasts, as long as it ends before the end of the seventh day, she goes to the mikveh that night, and that's that. And she's tahor to her husband. On the other hand, if it happens during the 11 days of Ziva, then it depends whether it was 1 or 2 days or whether it was 3 or more. 1 or 2, she needs 1 clean day. She's a shemeres yom keneged yom. 3 or more, she needs 7 clean days.
In between?
What do you mean in between? You're either in your main Nida or your main Ziva.
She's a Ziva Ktana with what?
Ziva Ktana with 1 or 2 that are during the 11 days. And then 3 or more makes her a Ziva Gdola, where she needs 7 clean days. So Rebbe made a Fakana as follows, says Rebbe Yosef. Rasa Yom, for these people like in these little towns where they're not necessarily familiar with the ins and outs of the din. Rasa Yom Echad, in all the time, if a woman has bleeding for 1 day, Keshev Shisha Vahu, then what she needs in order to be Tahar, she needs 6 extra days plus the day itself that she had the flow. Because what are the possibilities? You have either that 1 day was during the main nida, and in that case, that's the halacha. You need 6 more days after that, because then you need a complete, and you need 7 days from when it began. Or it was during the main ziva, in which case she needs only 1 day. But since they're not clear on it, they can easily get confused between your main nida and your main ziva. So therefore you make her wait 6 days, and that way, no matter what, she's covered.
Altogether seven.
Nida period. Right. Shnayim, what happens if she has bleeding 2 days in a row? Then the takana was also teshuv shisha v'hein. Then also she needs 6 days, including the days and plus the days themselves when she had the bleeding. Now, what are the possibilities? When you have 2 days in succession, you could have both of them could be doing the yemei ziva. Hello. You could have as follows: both of them could be doing the yemei nida. That could be the first and second of the yemei nida. In that case, she'd need only 5 days. You could have both of them are doing the Yemei Ziva, in which case she only needs 1 day. She's a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. But you could have one of them. But you can have, yeah, one of them is the 11th day of Yemei Ziva, and the next one is the first day of Yemei Nida. In that case, you would need 6 days. The beginning of the next Yemei Nida. Therefore, in that case, she would actually need 6 clean days. She would need 6 days after that. And therefore, so the takana was also that in that case, she needs 6 days to be on the safe side in case it was 1 day of Ziva and 1 day of Nida. Tosfos gives a different, that's Rashi. Tosfos gives a different explanation. If there were 2 days in a row, you could easily have, one of them could have been a color that doesn't make her tame, as we learned earlier. The other one might have been yes, so therefore she needs 6 days to be on the safe side.
So on the 11th day of Yemei Ziva,
if she has bleeding, then she...
And the next day?
Well, then she's... So then you have 1 day of Ziva and 1 day of Nida. We're actually going to talk about that later on. We're actually going to be talking about that at the very end of the Masechta. We're going to be talking about those dinim. What happens if she has, like on Dafai and Beis, Ayin Gimel, we're going to be talking
That's
about those dinim.
Here
we're only mentioning it briefly. But
yeah, okay.
Shloisha, then Rebbe's takana was, if she bleeds for 3 days in a row, some of the one out near the bottom, if she bleeds for 3 days in a row, then Teshev Shivanakim, then Rebbe Takana was, she needs 7 clean days regardless, because then it could be that all three of them were doing the Yemei Ziva, and then that's the din, then she needs 7 clean days. So this way, in other words, Rebbe Takana for these people out in the field was meant for, this way you'll cover all your bases. This way you keep things simple and you cover all your bases. Amar of Zera, so Rav Zera says, a further development, famous thing, Bnos Yisrael Achmiru Al Atzman, Jewish women made a chumer on themselves, Sha'afilu Royas Tipas Dam Techardo, even if they only have a mustard-sized drop of blood, which, they still have to keep Shiva Nakiyim for it, as if it was 3 days in a row or more of bleeding. Again, according to Rebbe's takana, you would never need Shiva Nakiyim unless she bled for 3 or more days in a row. The chumrah of Bnos Yisrael is even if there was much less than that, even if there was only one tiny re'iyah of blood, they still consider it as though she's a Zavagdola and there she has to have Shiva Nakiyim. reasons behind that tachana, different Rishonim talk about in different other places in Gemara where this is brought. Rashi mentions, for example, in Megillah, Talmidei Rabbeinu Yona talk about it in Brachos, various possible reasons. One reason is there might indeed be, you can have a case, for example, where Mitzad HaDin, a woman has a tiny amount of bleeding and needs Shiva Nikiyim, namely, suppose that she previously was Neda, or suppose previously she was a Zava, rather, previously she was a Zava Gdola, she had to have 7 clean days, and we've learned before that if she bleeds even a little bit during that time, then it breaks up the 7 days and she has to start all over. So therefore, there is a case where for a drop of blood, you need Shiva Nikiyim, and therefore the Bnei Yisrael decided to make it a uniform thing that always we're going to do that.
Is the Bnei Yisrael mocking on themselves for this? Why is Rebbe saying...
Because Rebbe is talking about before the sin. Because Rebbe is talking about before the Chumrah of Bnei Yisrael came about. So Rebbe's is before that whole concept came about.
Oh.
So therefore, before that, then you have for the women in the Svadis, the women in these outlying fields, and whatever. So later on in Reb Zeira's times, or so close to it, Bnei Yisrael made this Chumrah for themselves And now, even though it started out as only a chumrah of Bnei Yisrael, eventually it became, once it was accepted, and it's in the Gemara over here, and Reb Zera mentions it, the Gemara even mentions it in Brachos as an example of halacha psukka, an established halacha, which you actually have, by the way, in some Nuskois, in some Sidurim, you know, like this we have, we say every day in Davening, Kol Hashana halachas b'chol yom, anybody who learns halachas every day, mu tachloisho b'nei l'malo. We're going to have it at the very end of our Masechta, actually. And in Nusach Spardi Sidurim, they actually have an example of such a halacha is this halacha over here. So it's an example of a halacha psukka. And the accepted thing, therefore, is that it's accepted and there's no playing around with it. So that's the thing. You have Rebbe's Takana came from before that, but after Bnei Yisrael came up with this Chumrah and the Chachamim accepted it and it became an established part of Halacha, then that's it. You always have to have Shiva Nikiyim, even if it was only a tiny amount of blood. Regardless whether it was a nid or yomei, so this is why we mentioned throughout the Masechta that nowadays we don't do the 7 and 11 days. This is where it comes from. That we see that always, whether she's in the 7 days or whether she's in the 11 days, we always consider any amount of bleeding makes it considered as though she was a Zava Gdola and needs 7 full clean days.
So let's say she is Nida. What happens during Nida, she has blood only during the 7 first days?
Then she still needs Shiva Nikiyim. That's what we're saying. We treat it as though she was a Zava Gdola. The fact that you need 4 or 5 days before the Shiva Nikiyim is another matter. That's what we talked about earlier because there might be Paletas Shikvat Zera. That's a separate matter. That only applies.
11 days, not 7 days.
Yemei Ziva lasts for 11 days, but it doesn't mean she's actually a Zava during the 11 days. It means potentially she should be a Zava during those 11 days.
And even if she's not a Zava, she still has to keep Shiva Nikiyim?
She has to keep Shiva Nikiyim any time there's bleeding, whether it was during the 7 Yemei Nida, whether it was during the 11 Yemei Ziva. That's what we're saying. So continues the Gemara. Adverei Rava Lerav Shmuel v'Darash. Rava took Rav Shmuel for a walk. That's one explanation of Adverei. It actually mentions elsewhere. The Darash, and he darshin as follows. There's different other explanations. One of them, Rabbi Hananel, explains that it means like he prompted him to say as follows. Like he prompted him, you should say the following, Yudyosh, or whatever. Kishta Shnei Yomim. Suppose a woman has labor pains with bleeding for 2 days, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, that sometimes it, under some circumstances that blood is tahor, and under some circumstances she's nidor or zava. Vila Shlishi Hipila. Then on the third day she miscarried. The din is Teshiv Shiva Nakim. She has to have 7 clean days. Why? Kasavar, because Rava holds. Ein kishuri l'nefalim. Number one, this whole concept that dam kishuri is tahor under certain circumstances will apply only when it was a viable birth, only when it was a live birth of a baby that's going to survive, not when it was a stillbirth, as in this case, because she miscarried. It means that the concept of kishuri that we said we learned earlier in the Masechta, in the fourth parak, we said we had a pasuk that tells us that dam koshi is tahor. He holds that din only applies if it was a live birth, not if it was a stillbirth, as it was in this case. And also, Rava holds the actual psichosakeva bloidam. He also holds of a concept that we learned before, that whenever the womb opens, there's always blood comes out, whether you see it or not. Therefore, it means inevitably that you had, therefore, 3 days in succession of bleeding. Therefore, she needs shiva nakiyim. Two that we know about, which were dam koshi, and had there been a live birth after that, she would have been tahor, but she would have been tummy from the birth, but she wouldn't have been a zava, in other words. And then the third day, because e epshal of psichas akeva blow down, there had to have been blood. Therefore, you have 3 days in a row. Therefore, shivinaki. Amalei the popular Rava. So the Papa asked Rava, why do you need to say that? My iria kish the shnei yomim. Who? Why do we need to mention the case where she had dam koshi for 2 days in a row first after the mashu of alma? After all, wouldn't the din be the same thing even if it was only a tiny amount of bleeding? Da'amar Rav Zera. We just quoted what Rav Zera said. Benoit Yisrael achmir al asman. That Jewish women are machmer on themselves, shaku the rois kippas dam techado, even if they only see a mustard-sized seed drop of blood, yosh vaseleh shivinakim, they still sit in shivinakim. So always she's going to need shivinakim, whether there were 2 days in a row of koshi or not. So once you're saying the actual psichos akeva below dam, automatically that presupposes that there was bleeding as accompanying this miscarriage, and therefore she needs shivinakim for that reason alone. Koshi meaning labor pain. Amalei, so Rava answers him, there's a difference. Aminalach Isura, I'm talking about something which is an actual Isur Daraisa. In this case, where she had dam koshi for 2 days, plus then there was a miscarriage which was saying had to have been accompanied by blood on the third day, she's a Zavana Daraisa level. Amit Minhaga, you, the Papa, are asking me based on a minhag that Rav Zera mentioned. It's a minhag. Hecha da achmor, hecha da loy achmor, loy achmor. Not in all places have they accepted that chumra yet. Where they're machmir, where they're not, they're not. In Rava's times, Rava lived only a generation after Rav Zera, they hadn't yet accepted this chumra in all places. Benos Yisrael. Eventually, it became accepted that it's the universal thing and there's no playing around with it. But that took time. So in Rava's times, it wasn't universal yet, so therefore, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to talk about a number of dinim that Rava said. Tavua, Nesav, Chamin, Lipo, Smotim, Agabe, Namol, Simen. These are keywords for a number of statements in Halacha that we're going to quote from Rava. The first one is about a din in Hilchos Nida, and the rest of them, and then there's the following sugya about that, all the way until the next Mishnah, is going to be about the dinim of Tovling, the dinim of Tevila. Okay. Number one, Amar Rava, Tavua li nafe, if a woman was proposed marriage, somebody proposed to her, he wants to marry her, then he's spicer, and she agrees, she's willing to get married, she needs 7 clean days after that, because you have a concept called dam chimud. You may have that her desire for her chosen, eventually to be husband, causes that a little bit of blood comes out, and a little bit of blood is enough to make her tame, as we said.
It's a very rare occurrence.
It's not necessarily so rare. On top of that, you also have the question, is it that dam chimud itself makes her tame, or is it the possibility that it may trigger also dam nida? Whatever. It's not necessarily, maybe, but it's still considered, there's still that possibility, and therefore she needs shiva nakiyim.
He was there for this whim after Kiddushin.
No, in other words, Papashtus, usually in those times, you usually had a year between Kiddushin and Nisroin. But Papashtus, we're talking about over here, that Tavur Li Nase, like they, you know, he asked, Papashtus could be even after Kiddushin. Let's say, you know, they're actually setting a date. So therefore, the chimud, the desire, can cause her to emit a little bit of blood. So the Gemara tells an example. Ravina I asikle lebre beira chanina, or chaviva actually it says. Ravina was arranging for the chasana of his son with the daughter of Rav Chanina or Rav Chaviva. Amarle. So while they're working out the details of the wedding and the ksuba and everything, Amarle. So he Ravina I guess says to Rav Chaviva. What do you think of writing the ksuba for 4 days from now? That we're going to have the wedding 4 days from now. Amalei Ein. So he says yes. Marshall brings the possibility, and Marshall also discusses it, that maybe it's not Larval Yom 4 days from now, but rather next Wednesday, because we know Solim Isas Yom Rabbi, usually an unmarried girl, as it says at the beginning of Solis, usually the wedding takes place on Wednesday. So what do you think of setting the wedding for this next Wednesday, according to that? Omer Le'en, Sarav Chaviva said, sure. He mutter la'arbar, then when it came the fourth day, nutter adarbar achrina, instead of making the wedding then, they pushed it off for another 4 days. Therefore, he acted shiva yomi basrahu yoma. So it came out there was a delay of 7 days since the original day. In other words, when we say 4 days from now, it's inclusive. It means, let's say they were talking on Sunday. So they were saying, let's have it 4 days from now, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now they're pushing it off another 4 days, whether Thursday, Friday, Shabbat, Sunday. So it comes out, it's a week later. Amale Maihai, so Chaviva asked, what's all that about? Why did you postpone it another 4 days? Amale, so Ravina answers, like, Sovala Maher Lahadar Rava, don't you hold of what Rava said? Amar Rava, to Orli Nasim and Isfaisa, when a man proposes marriage to a woman and she agrees, Trichaleshav Shivanakim, she needs Shivanakim. So therefore, we had to delay it by 7 days, because from when we originally set the date, there might have been dam chimud on that day, and you need, therefore, 7 days.
Let me ask you a question. If she's a psula, how can there be dam chimud?
What does one have to do with the other? Psula means that she still has her hymen. It doesn't mean that she still menstruates. She still has dam nida. So therefore, there can be dam chimud as well. There can still be blood coming out of her uterus. Amalei, so Rav Chaviva says, I know of what Rava says, but Amar to Amar Rava Begdoila. Sure, but you know, Rava is talking about an older girl, the Kachaz Yadama, who's already of the age to be having periods. Well, because in this case, obviously, the situation was that Rav Chaviva's daughter, who was going to be marrying Ravina's son, was young, yeah. So Avavakana, the Lechaz Yadama, when she's a younger girl, she's not even seeing blood yet, mi Omar. Did Rava ever say such a thing that then you have to be worried about Dam Chimud? Amalei, so Ravina tells him, yes, the Feirush Omar Rava, yes. As a matter of fact, Rava said explicitly, Loishnag Dola Loishnag Tana, it doesn't matter whether she's an older girl or a younger girl. Why? Because Gdoila time am I? Because after all, with an older girl, why are you saying that she has to wait 7 days? Mishum de Machamda, because there's that desire which may cause a drop of blood to come out. Kananami Machamda. No, and a younger girl also could have the same chimut. Okay, she doesn't have periods yet, but we're not talking about something that comes as a regular period. We're talking.
We're getting married to Kirionaridia. She doesn't have menstruation. She cannot have children.
Not yet, but it's okay. But not yet. But in fact, we learned actually in the second paragraph of our Masechta that it's inappropriate for an older, for a mature man to be marrying a younger girl, because then in a certain sense it's wasting time that could have been used for period Arabia. Nonetheless, the fact is throughout Jewish history you have had times when people got married young for one reason or another. In this particular case, that's how it was. In that case, that's how it was. And you know, it could also be. I mean, keep in mind also some women reach puberty and start menstruating later than others. It's very possible, you know, Rav Chaviva's daughter, who's marrying Ravina's son, is not necessarily under 12 years old. She could have been, you know, already 14, 15 or whatever, and it just happens that she hasn't actually started menstruating yet. Okay, anyway, Ravina tells him it doesn't make a difference. Either way, the concept of Dam Chimud still applies. So this is the halacha. You do have that concept of Dam Chimud. Practically speaking, I mean, you don't usually have it on a day-to-day basis, because usually, you know, you set the date of the chas in a month in advance, so you know, you usually have plenty of time for shipping the kiyum anyway, but, yeah.
We still apply it today,
but practically speaking, I mean, you don't usually have it, because from when they set the date of the wedding until they actually have it, because usually, usually a few years, usually a couple of months, so yeah. You have also a machlokes with a poskim. Does she actually have to do a bedikah every day of those 7 days, or is it enough to do one bedikah? So lachila, she should be doing a bedikah every day, but the evet, she does it only one time. It's enough. Okay. Second thing, Omer Rava. Now we're going to start talking about dinim involving kvila. Now we have the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma that there's 10 tekonis that Ezra made, and one of them is that a woman has to do chafifa before she tovels. There's a machlokas in particular here between Rashi and Tosfos, and other Rishonim also are involved. Chafifa means, first of all, what does chafifa mean? Does it mean something like combing? In that case, it applies only to the hair. And then you have a machlokas, does it apply only to the hair of the head, or does it apply to other body hair as well? Then you have another way of looking at it, that chafifa means scrubbing, and in that case, it applies to the whole body. In any case,
what?
Scrubbing the body to make sure that there's nothing stuck there, that would be a chafifa. The point being, the Gemara mentions over there, we're going to have later on in our sugya on some of Zion on the base, that midaraisa, of course, there is a concept of chatzitza, which would prevent the tefillah from being good, but the definition of a chatzitza daraisa is actually fairly narrow. Only midrabanan is it wider. Therefore, Ezra had to make a takana that there has to be chatzitza. So again, you have, according to Rashi, chatzitza primarily refers to the hair of the head. According to a point of Tosfos, it may refer also to hair elsewhere on the body or to the body as a whole. To scrub it to make sure there's nothing stuck to it. Okay. So Rava says, Isha loy sochuf loy ben neser, when a woman is cleaning her hair, let's say, she should not use neser. We mentioned neser a few days ago in connection with the Shiva Sammanim. It's some kind of chemical compound of sodium and potassium and carbon and whatever else, whatever. She shouldn't use that. Veloy b'choil, or also she shouldn't use sand. Although on the side over here it says that instead of choil, it's supposed to be b'ahol. She's not supposed to use ahol, which we also mentioned the other day is aloe or some plant like that. Whatever. Why not? Benesim mishum de makatif. She shouldn't be using neser because that causes hair that breaks off the hair. So therefore, it causes that individual hairs then break off and get tangled up with the other hairs and then chatzitza. Or b'chol or b'ahol mishum de masrich. She also shouldn't be using sand or ahol, whatever, because it causes the hair to stick together. And you want it to be separate. You want the hairs to be separate. So it's not a chatzitza.
Skin,
Who said anything about skin? We're talking about the hair.
Yes, the hair on the skin.
Again, if we say that chafifa primarily refers to the head, then it would mean using sand. But again, that's why we have the girsa over here on the side. That's not supposed to be sand. It's supposed to be ahol. It's supposed to be aloe or some similar plant. Okay. Anyway, the point is that, and even sand, yeah, people would clean their skin with sand in those days. They would, you know, like it's an abrasive, but fine. You know, they'd use it like something. Yeah, people would, like sometimes nowadays people use certain kinds of abrasives. Sometimes you have soap with a little bit of abrasive in it. Okay. Anyway, the point is that the problem with it is that it causes the hair to stick together, and you don't want that because the hair has to be separated in order not to be able to do that. Okay. But Amar Amemah Meshmei de Rava. Then Amemah says another din in the name of Rava, also about chafifa. Isha loy sochuf ela b'chamin. When a woman does chafifa, when she's cleansing her hair, should only be using hot water. But not using cold water. Even if it's water that was heated by the sun. Now you have two different gersois over here. You notice over here you have an aleph and you have a goyis habach, which is the va'afilu b'chamechama referring back to the first part, or is it referring to the second part? In other words, we're saying she should use hot water, but not cold. Are we saying she should use hot water, and it's fine also if it's hot, if it's water that was heated by the sun, that's also okay? Or is it saying that you should use davka water that was heated by the fire, but not cold water, and not even water that was heated by the sun? So like, that's not hot enough. The two different gear sizes. Showing in my time alloy, in any case, why shouldn't she be using it? So what means water that was heated by the sun? So, sown in my time alloy, so that's the point. You have different gear sizes, whether she can use water that was heated by the sun. Okay. Sown in my time alloy, why can't she use cold water? Mishum de krivi, the reason is because the water is cold. Umashru mazya. It causes the hair to be mashru. So what is that? Rashi explains that it means that it makes the hair stiff. So therefore it makes it harder to get the dirt off it. You have various other explanations among Rishonim what mashru means. It can mean that it makes the hair fall out, and then you have the same problem as before, that then you have the hair, that the detached hair gets tangled up with the other. It can mean that it causes it to get knotted up. Whatever it is, the point is you're not supposed to use cold water. Okay. V'amar Rava, also Rava says, l'olam yulamed adam b'seich b'seich, a person should always teach the members of his household, meaning his wife and anybody else in his wife who has to go to the mikveh, anybody else in his household who has to go to the mikveh, shetehei isha madicha b'seich k'makeha b'mayim. That the woman has to rinse the folds and crevices of her body with water before she goes to the mikveh. So for example, Rashi says, her armpits, her vaginal area, all that. Pashtus or nose also, yeah, any place where you have folds of skin. the pastures also, like, you know, you have a fatter person, let's say, you know, has folds and crevices and various places in their body. So that too, you have to rinse them out. Okay, the Gemara says, maybe we have a contradiction. We learn in a Braisa, the places in the body where there are folds or the places that are hidden, for example, the inside of her mouth or the inside of her vagina or whatever, you don't need water to go in there. So who cares whether you rinse them out? Who cares whether you have dirt on there or whatever? Water doesn't need to get into them anyway. The answer is nihi de biasmaim. It's a breath, yeah. The answer is nihi de biasmaim loibeinan. It's true that we don't require water to actually get in there. She doesn't, let's say, need to open her mouth to allow the mitzvah water in. But mokum haroi lebiasmaim beinan. We do require it that it would be suitable for water to come in. In other words, it has to be that if she were to open it, water would be able to touch everywhere in it. So therefore, in other words, it has to be clean, it has to be clean, no chatissa. And then, for example, let's say with the inside of her mouth, if she keeps her mouth closed, as long as it's not tightly closed, as we're going to say soon, then fine. So the same.
You cannot close your mouth when you go to the.
No, so you do. What you do is you close it loosely. You don't close it like that tightly because then it makes folds around them. But you don't have to keep your mouth open either. You keep it closed, but.
Like when you're quiet.
So in other words, you do have to have that all these places have to have that in principle water would be able to get into them. Therefore, they have to be clean. That's what we're saying. Therefore, you have to rinse out the base hakmatim, the armpit, for example. The water might not get into every part of the armpit because, as the Gemara is going to mention soon, there's a certain position in which you put your arms while you're toileting. That doesn't matter. As long as it's clean enough that water could have gotten into there, then it's good enough. Kidravera, and that works. That works like Rav Zera's rule, famous rule that we have in throughout Shas. The Amr Rav Zera, we learned in Menachos, we have the concept over there that the maximum size korban mincha that a person can bring is 60 isarin of flour. And we said over there, why is one that we talked about in Menachos. Yeah, so why is that? Because we said that only up to 60 isarin are you able to mix it with the oil. If it's larger than that, you're not going to be able to mix it. Right, the kliachar in one case. So the question was, so what's the problem? The halacha is, if you don't mix the korban mincha, it's still kosher, even if you have a mincha consists of flour and oil, but if you didn't mix them together, you just poured them into a keli, it's still kosher. So here comes Rav Zera's rule, the Amr Rav Zera, call haroi l'bila, if it's suitable that mixing could have been done, ein bila ma'akevesvay, then yes, bila, the mixing is not actually massive. So if you have a korban mincha that could have been mixed, the fact that you didn't mix it doesn't matter.
As long as
it could have been.
What does that mean, it could have been mixed? Meaning
that it's small enough that you could have mixed it if you wanted to. So you didn't bother mixing, fine. The she'en roi labila, but if it's impossible to mix it, for example, if it's more than 16 sorin, bila ma'akevet. Bila ma'akevet, then the bila is ma'akev. Then the mixing is ma'akev. And that is why you can't bring 61 estroinim in one keli, because you wouldn't be able to mix it. So we have that concept comes up in a dozen or so places in Shas, that when you have something is possible to do, then the fact that you didn't actually do it doesn't necessarily matter so much. But when it's impossible to do, then it is massive. So here's an example. So if you have, for example, that, you know, water is not getting into her mouth because she's not opening it, fine. But it could have gotten, it would have been able to get in everywhere in her mouth, including between her teeth and everything, had she opened her mouth, because she cleaned between her teeth and so forth thoroughly, and therefore it's kosher. But if, for example, there was something stuck between her teeth, where even had her mouth been open, the water wouldn't have gotten in there because of that thing stuck, then it's a chatitza.
And the whole
tefillah is right.
It was right from Bila, they didn't make Bila, but the
Ever is still good. So we're saying it's kosher, that's all. I mean, the fact is, it should be missing, of course, yeah.
But the Ever is kosher?
No, we're saying as far as the Minchah. As far as Chassidus in Tevila, actually, let's talk later when we continue later on Tzemach Zayin, we'll talk about something relative.
But the Ever,
So far what we're saying is, if the Beis HaKmatim and Beis HaStorim, if there is some kind of chatzitza in there, then even though in actual fact water wasn't getting in there anyway because you're not opening your mouth, for example, nevertheless it's ma'akev because it would have been impossible for water to get in there even had the mouth been open. That's what we're saying even b'di'evet. So far we're saying even b'di'evet. Bila Ma'akevis, right? We're saying because Bila was impossible, therefore Bila is Ma'akev, therefore the same thing over here. Because it was impossible for water to get between these teeth, let's say, because there was something stuck between them, therefore even the fact that you, in practice, water was not getting in there anyway because you didn't open your mouth, nevertheless the Tevila is possible. Yeah.
She's Madias in the Tumatim. Doesn't she have to clean it with soap or something, which just water is enough?
Well, so that actually gets into the machlokas when we talk over here about chafifa. Are we talking the chafif, the takana of chafifa? Does it apply primarily to the hair, or does it apply to the rest of the body as well? Even the
do it in the mouth, when they don't use chafifa.
No, you, for example, I mean brushing with teeth. In the case
but
of the mouth,
that's
according to that, it's part of chafifa.
What about the rest of the mouth?
The point is, okay, whatever, she cleans out of the rest of her mouth, whatever you can. So yeah, you take a toothbrush to everywhere. Yeah, but anyway, I mean, even the Rishonim who say that chafifa refers only to the hair, they do agree that you do have to at least rinse off the rest of the body. Okay, anyway. Omer Robin Barav Ada Omer of Yitzchok, in this connection, speaking of this concept of Beis Astorim or whatever, Maisa B'Shechofe Shal Rebbe, it happened once with one of Rebbe's maidservants, Shetovlov also, she toveled, and then she came out of the mikveh, V'nimtzalo Etzem Choset Ben Shineha, then they found that there was a bone stuck between two of her teeth. V'Yitzricha Rebbe Tvila Acheres, and Rebbe required her to tovel again, because it was an improper tefillah, because there was a chavitza over there. That's the point. In other words, even though when she was in the mitzvah, she wasn't required to open her mouth, so had there not been a bone over there, then there wouldn't have been an issue. But because there was a bone, it means that even had her mouth been open, water wouldn't have gotten in there. That is an example of kol she'ena roi lebila, and therefore bila ma'akeves, and therefore we're saying that it's ma'akev and the tefillah was no good.
She was
a maidservant. Okay, maidservants also have the dinim of Dr. Tumah and Tahara.
You
need
to talk about the shmach of the base rabbi,
not the... Fine, in this particular case, we learn a din from them. The Omar Rava. Rava says, here's another din. Suppose that a woman toveled, comes out of the mikveh, and then you find something on her that is a chafifa. Im somuch l'chafifa tovla, so it depends. If she did the chafifa, and very shortly after that, she did the tevilah, einat tzricha lochof v'lifo, then she does not need to do the chafifa and tevilah again, because then the fact that she did the chafifa implies that she carefully, she made sure there was nothing on her that was choitzit.
Right.
Therefore, if we find a chatzitza on her now, the likelihood is that it came on her after she toveled, and in that case, it's no problem. The imlav, but if not, if she did the chafifa a longer amount of time before the tefillah, tzricha lochof v'litvo, then she does need to do the chafifa and tovel again, because then there's a high likelihood that the chafitza was on her before she toveled.
Now we're talking about chafitza in the hair, obviously.
No, we're talking about chafitza anywhere on the body.
So what, chafifa is mostly for the hair?
Again, according to Rashi, chafifa is mostly for the hair. So Rashi would learn that. So Rashi would say we're talking about a chafifa on her hair. Everybody else would say that it's on the whole body, right? Then ikadamri, then we have another version of what Rava says, not if it was right afterwards, samuch, but im ba'oiso yom shechafifa tavla, if it was on the same day that she did the chafifa and then she did the tevilah, ein estricha locho v'litvo, then if she finds a chatzitza, she does not need to do another chafifa and another toveling, v'im lav, estricha locho v'litvo, and if not, then she does. So the Gemara says, my b'nai, what is the actual difference between these two versions of what Rava says, the first version that mentions somuch and the second one that just says that day? The answer is ikabenai lemismach lachafifa tevila. The naftamina between them is, should you be doing the chafifa as close as possible to the tevila? Is there a point to be doing the chafifa as close as possible to the tevila? Lemecha fiyamam of a litva v'lemitva b'leilya. Or, for example, can you be doing the chafifa during the day and then do the tevila that night? Or should you not be doing it that far? Or should you not be doing them that far apart? Tosfos though learns
not long in time, but it's long in.
So one second. First of all, Tosfos learns what the Gemara is saying over here a little bit different. Tosfos is learning that actually both Lashonis agree that the chafifa has to be as close as possible to the tefillah. Yeah. The argument between the two versions is, in this case where you found the chafifa on her, is it only if the chafifa was right before the tevilah, or is it if it was on the same day? Both of them agree that it should be done as close as possible.
But as close as possible can mean.
So what does it say? So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings like this. The ideal way to do it, and we're going to talk about later on that there can be exceptions to this, but the ideal way to do it is to begin the chafifa during the day, finish it off at the beginning of the night, and then go to the mikveh right after that. Because the problem is, based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here about by day versus by night, if, let's say, for example, she finishes the chafifa while it's still the day oina, and then she tovels, she can only tovel after the beginning of the night oina, the fact is it's separate oinas. It may be only a few minutes apart, but lahalacha is now considered two separate oinas, and therefore you have an issue. On the other hand, you're not supposed to do the whole chafifa at night, primarily because you may not do such a careful job of it. She may rush it. Therefore, it's supposed to be done that you start it by day, finish it at the beginning of the night, and then go to the mikveh right after that.
Why don't you just do it at night?
That's why, because then you may not have, you won't have enough time to do it properly, and she may not do it carefully. Yeah, so therefore, better to start it the way. Okay, another din. Omar Rava, Isha Leitamud Agabit Kli Cheres V'Tikbo. Rava says a woman is not supposed to stand on a Kli Cheres, on an earthenware container, and toil. Now, why not? Sovar of Kahana Lamehmer. On a Kli Cheres, in the mikveh, let's say. So, Sovar of Kahana Lamehmer, sort of Kahana thought to say the reason is, time of mind, Mishum Gzeres Merchatzos. He thought to say the reason might be because the Chachamim made a Gzera, because then it seems very similar to a bath. In a bathhouse, you have, for example, you have clay or earthen benches or whatever that you sit on. So therefore, if you're the point is, if you're allowed to use such a thing during tevila, then people are likely to confuse and think that you're allowed to tovel in a bathhouse, which of course you can't, because a bathhouse is not a kosher mikveh. The water is not made shaman. It's brought in there. It's usually drawn in kalim and then brought in there and whatever. So after Rav Kahana thought to say that's the reason, because if you're allowed to tovel standing on a kli cheres, then you may confuse it with a merchas and think that you could tovel there, implying therefore ha agabi silta, which if that were the case, the implication would be that if she stands on a silta, which Rashi says means, for example, a thick piece of wood, shapir dummy, then it would be perfectly fine because it's not similar to what they do in the Merchah. One second. However, Rav Chanan min Ahudah tells him, no, hasam time am I, actually no, the reason she's not supposed to stand on a kli cheres is for a different reason. Mishum de bois, because it'll make her nervous. Standing on a kli cheres, it's not well attached to the bottom or whatever. She's going to get nervous. It's not stable. Therefore, she may not tovel properly because she's afraid of falling. Siltanami be'ise. In that case, standing on a piece of wood would have the same problem, that she may be afraid that it's going to fall over or break or whatever, and then therefore she's not allowed to do it on that either. Which, by the way, the Rosh points out over here, that there is a nafkamina between the two reasons. If the reason is because of Gzeres Mechatzos, let's say she did stand on a Kli Cheres or whatever, then even b'dieved, the tevila would be no good, because the Chachamim would have made a Gzera that you don't want to confuse it with a Merchot. If you say it's just a practical matter that she may be afraid of falling, so if b'dieved, she toveled on it, and the fact is we do know that she toveled properly, then it would be okay.
So what is it?
So they have an afkamina between this. With that said, there is another opinion. There are Rishonim who learn that the reason behind, who learn based on a different Girsa in the Gemara over here or whatever, that the reason why you're not supposed to stand on a keli is because you can't tovel standing on anything which is mekabel truma. So then the point is, so a kli cheres, so we thought to say maybe a kli cheres shouldn't be an issue, because after all, a kli cheres is not metame from the outside, as we've learned throughout Shas. A piece of wood also maybe is not makabel truma. But we're saying, nevertheless, though, for example, a kli cheres intrinsically is makabel truma. It happens that from the outside, it's not makabel truma. A piece of wood can be makabel truma smidros. If you have a piece of wood, it's designated to stand on or whatever, that it's a kli.
Regular piece of wood.
random piece of wood is not. But if you have a piece of wood that's designated to stand on, so therefore we would have an issue with that. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says that for that reason you also have an issue if you have a wooden ladder in the mikveh. If you have a wooden ladder and you're going to stand on it while you're traveling, you have steps to go down to the mikveh. You can have an issue with it. Therefore, actually, so it says that better that you should have steps for the mikveh that are attached to the ground, that are attached to the ground and that are wide so that they themselves constitute a mikveh. And that way, even if she's standing on the steps, then it's okay. Right.
And if you attach the ladder, then it's okay also.
If you attach the ladder, maybe it's okay also. I don't know. Amr of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, another Jew. Isha lo titvel benamol. A woman should not tovel in a court where ships go in and out. Now, what's the problem with toveling in a port? Rashi learns the problem is because the ships that go in and out stir up a lot of mud and a lot of dirt and whatever. So therefore, you're very likely to have that dirt or mud or whatever sticks to her while she's toveling, and now it's going to be a chatitza. So it's in keeping with what we were just talking about chatitza. Okay, fine. and what about support for sailboats? Come on. Sailboats don't know. What?
Sailboats have engines.
Whatever. We'll talk about it in a second another reason. Afogav the hash to lecha. Now you're going to say, okay, so what's the problem? You're afraid because chatitza. Okay, where she checks herself afterwards and she doesn't find any dirt on her. No good. It might be because there was mud on her while she was toveling, and then it fell off. Birid yoni. What is birid yoni? Rashi says, I don't know what that word means. But Rashi says, it may mean something like shichshuch. Like, for example, you know, you come out of the mikveh or whatever, like you wiggle your feet or whatever in the water. You move. So then, there might have been mud on them, and then it fell off in the course of that. But it was there while she was toveling, and then it was a chatitza. So that would be a problem. We're talking about a port where ships come and go. Okay.
She's going in,
let's say, into the sea or a river port or whatever. Anyway, that's according to Rashi. The problem is that there might be mud stirred up over there by the boats, and it sticks to her, and you don't find any mud on her afterwards. It may have fallen off as she's coming out, but it was there while she was traveling.
But in our mikveh today, there's a ton of mud also.
Not necessarily.
Well,
no.
The waters are very dirty.
No, first of all, you're thinking of men's mikvahs. Women's mikvahs are much cleaner.
Even
a men's mikvah is... You have hair and whatever. Yeah. Anyway,
men, it doesn't matter
as much, right? Only if a man is toveling for gayrus, then it matters.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, Tosfos brings a different explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel. The problem with toveling in a port is a different one. There's always people coming and going. So therefore, she may hurry up the toveling. She may be nervous, similar to what we were just talking about. She doesn't want to be seen. So therefore, she's going to tovel as fast as possible, and she may not do a proper job of it. She needs to be in the proper position. She needs to make sure that all of her body and all of her hair are under the water, etc. And she may not because she's afraid because people are there. Then the Gemara continues that the... So what about this Afogab the Hashtalekha? Tosfa says, according to that Deusa, that doesn't belong over here. That line about that it fell off, according to Tosfa, that line belongs a couple of lines later in the Gemara. So all we have is, according to that, Isha lo titvel benamol, a woman should not tovel in a port because there's people around there and therefore she may be nervous and not tovel properly. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Avur de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, Avot Labinse, he made for his daughters when they needed to tovel mikvois the yom nisan or mapse the yom tishrei. He would make for them mikvois during the nisan time of year and mapse during the tishrei time of year. What are we talking about? So Rashi has a long explanation over here. The gist is we learned about this in Bechoros as well most recently. You have like this. There's a din that you can tovel. We know that there's two types of bodies of water that you can tovel in. There's a pool of rainwater. There's a mikveh and there's a mayan. There's a pool of rainwater, and there's a mayan, a spring. Now, when it comes to a pool of rainwater, the halacha is it has to be nikvin va'omdin. It has to be still water. It can't be flowing. This is the idea why you have, for example, if there's a crack in the mikveh, there's a problem. This is why if the filter is on, there's a problem, because then the water is flowing. It's not still. On the other hand, a Mayan, there's no issue. The water can be flowing.
Yeah.
And there's no issue. Fine. But so with a Mayan, you're allowed to tovel even when it's flowing. But with a mitzvah, you need mechunasin. You need the water to be collected in one place.
But it's the crack in the wall. What difference would it make?
Because then the water is flowing out, and it's not still water anymore.
No, it could be a crack in the tiling and not in the wall behind the tiling.
Okay, so if you have just a crack in the tile, I'm not saying there's a problem with that. I'm talking about there's a crack in the actual wall. Anyway, the point is, therefore, so what happened now, what happens is, Nissan time, the river where his daughters would be toveling is full of, is much larger than usual. Why? Because snow, because rain, because of rain and snow melt, or because of rain and snow melt and whatever. Therefore, you have, what you have is now, on the other hand, part of the river comes from the main flow of the river, after all, throughout the year, comes from springs, after all, right? Most rivers are fed by springs. So during the time of year when you don't have rain and snow melt and whatever, then there's not much of an issue. Most of the water in the river comes from springs, and the halacha is then that you can tovel in them even if you're flowing, so no problem. But during Nissan time, you have, therefore, the river is much larger because of rain and because of snow melt. Therefore, you have a problem that you may have more rainwater in there than May Mayan, and then it would be possible if it's flowing. Therefore, he would arrange for them. Therefore, he would arrange for them mikvahs during that time of year, where, in other words, he would dig pits near the river, for example, and then bring some of the water in there, or whatever. So that way, the water is in one place; it's not flowing, and then they can tovel there, as opposed to, in other words, other times of year, they'd be able to tovel in the actual river. Rashi over here brings another explanation, which he rejects, though, which is that he had to make sure that he had mikvahs for them because in case they were zavos, what if they weren't nidus, what if they were zavos? And a zava, according to this way of looking at it, needs mayim chayim, needs spring water traveling. So therefore, a river wouldn't be good enough. However, Rashi says that's incorrect. A male zav needs mayim chayim. A female zava does not.
Why would a river would not be enough?
Because a river is not necessarily mayim chayim. It's not fresh spring water. You have, for example, as far as the halacha of the paradroma, that you have to have, you have very, very, very specific requirements for mayim chayim, and a river wouldn't necessarily, especially in this time, again, when you have a lot of rainwater in it and a lot of snow melt in it, it wouldn't be mayim chayim.
Mayim chayim just comes from
mayim chayim comes from a spring. But during that time of year, it's not spring water because it's mostly rainwater. But again, so again, Rashi says that that's incorrect. The halacha is only a zav requires mayim chayim. A zava is not. Right. That's how it is. Okay, anyway, so those are the different explanations why Avraham Shmuel made mikvahs for his daughters during this time. Then he made for them mat during Tishrei. The Rashi explained, Tishrei time, you don't have the problem with rainwater. It is mostly May Mayan, therefore no problem, it can be flowing. But you still need mats underfoot, because otherwise you have mud at the bottom of the river, and we just said mud on their feet, it's going to be a chatitza. Other Rishonim learn that the reason he made for the mat is based on what we were talking about before, about toveling in a port. If they're toveling in the river and people are passing by, they're going to be embarrassed and they're going to tovel too quickly. So therefore he put up mats as a screen, not underfoot, but as a screen, so to screen them off from people, so this way they could tovel in privacy. Okay. Amar of Gidol Amar Rav. Okay, here's another din. Rav Gidol says in the name of Rav. Nosna Tavsha Libna. Suppose that a woman has gotten ready for the mikveh, she's done her chafifa and all, and then she gave a stew, a cooked dish or whatever, to her son, and we're talking about something which is very sticky, like pea soup or whatever, the tavla, and then she toveled,
and it
may be stuck on her, but also, and she comes out of the mikveh, loy also la tvila. The tvila does not count. Afagav dehashta leka. Again, let's say she looks afterwards, she doesn't see any of the stuff on her skin, no good. Ema biryoni nafal, same thing, as we said before. When she's shaking herself off as she's coming out, then maybe it fell off, but maybe it was still on her while she was in the mikveh. So again, we're not talking about something that has a thin consistency that's going to get washed away by the water. We're talking about something that has a thick consistency which might conceivably have still been stuck to her skin while she was there, right? Okay. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano another line, which we don't have in all Gemaras, which is, suppose the woman, when she goes to Tovel, if she's holding her baby behind her back and Toveling, then it doesn't count. So what does that mean? So it doesn't count. So Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is we're talking about after she got undressed to go into the mikveh, mm-hmm. She's holding her baby behind her back. The one way of looking at it is that there may have been the same problem with mud. There may have been mud or dirt or whatever on the baby, and it stuck to her, and therefore there's a chatzitza. Now, so then in fact Tosfos says, right, it might actually apply even if it was before she went to the mikveh, because you have the same problem. Dirt from him might have gotten on her. There are the Shonim who learn, though, that we're talking about not so much a problem of mud, but the problem of that his skin is going to be a chatzitza against hers. So if you wet him with the mikveh water first, or she wets herself with the mikveh water first, yes, then it's okay. In a similar vein that we have, for example, Tosfos HaRosh, for example, talks about it over here, to say that because there might have been dirt on him and maybe it stuck to her, Tosfos HaRosh says that's too much of a chumer. You can't be mocking around the ground with that. But rather, the problem is that, his skin against hers is going to be a chatzitza. So what it is, though, if his skin or her skin was wetted with the mikveh water first, then it's not a problem. The same principle as we have when you're toveling dishes, if you're holding on to the dish tightly, then you have a problem. It's a chatzitza. What you do is you wet your hand with the mikveh water first, and then you hold on to it, and then the water that's on your skin, that's between it and the keli, joins with the mikveh water, and then you don't have a chatzitza.
Provided that there's no sticky elements.
Well, obviously, if there's sticky stuff on him, but again, Tosfos mentioned that, but Tosfos HaRosh says it's too much of a chumra to assume there might have been dirt on him and it might have stuck to her, etc. Okay, continues the Gemara. Omar Rami Bar Abba, or Rami Bar Choma, it says on the side, Hani Rivdi de Kosilta. Suppose the woman has on her a scar, or not, whatever, a puncture from bloodletting. Is it a chatzitza or not? So it depends. Ad plosa yomi lechaiti, when it's within 3 days, then it's not a chatzitza, because it's still soft. And even if it's starting to scab over, the scab is still soft. It's still fully attached to the body. So it's considered like part of the body. So it's not a chatzitza. Mikan ve'ela chaiti. If it's any older than that, then it's a chatzitza because it's starting to dry up. It's starting to separate from the skin. And therefore, it's a chatzitza. So in practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that if a woman has scabs on her body, then she has to rub them and try as much as possible to eat again. Okay, so you rub them gently, soften them or whatever gently. But you have to. Okay. Here's another din. If she has the gummy stuff that gets in your eye, the like when you wake up in the morning, you have this phlegm or whatever in your eye often. So that kind of stuff. If it's moist, then it's not a chatzitza. Well, yavish chotzitz, but if it's dry, then it's a chatzitza. And that's when it's in the eye. If it's outside the eye, then the Rishonim say, then it is a chatzitza either way. Tosfos mentions it over here, that if it's in the eye, then when it's moist, it's
in the eye.
Sometimes you have it in the eye itself. So if it's in the eye itself. Okay, so Tosfos says, if it's in the eye, then the tears will moisten it, and therefore it won't allow it to become dry. But if it's outside the eye, even if it's moist, it's a chatzitza because eventually it's going to dry. Amosai nikra yavish, at what point do we consider it dry? Mishal shemaschal lirak, from when it starts becoming greenish or yellowish. Okay. Amos Shmuel says, here's another din. Choil shebaseh ha'ayin, if she has eye shadow that's in the eye itself, ainit choitzit, then again it's not a chatzitza. Again, because the tears wet it, and therefore it doesn't really become it dissolves it or whatever. Or another possibility that's mentioned is because she wants it to be in her eye, so therefore it's not a chatzitza. Based on what we're going to learn on Amud Beis, that in order for it to be a chatzitza, one aspect of it is you have to be makbid, you have to object to it being there. So like this, she put on this
makeup.
It's not necessarily, I should say, that choil, I mean, it was used as makeup. It was also used sometimes as an ointment for the eye, like when the eye is infected or whatever. So therefore, you want it to be inside the eye. So if it's in the eye, ain't a chotis, v'shav gabe, eye in chotis. If it's outside the eye, then it is a chotisah. But im hoyu einer perchos, but if her eyes are fluttering, so Rashi says, she's constantly opening and closing her eyelids, then afilu agabe ayin any chotis. And even if it's outside the eye, it's not a chotisa. Either Rashi says because the fluttering, the opening and closing of her eyes will take away this eye shadow. So therefore, like, you don't really have a thick layer of it left. All you have is just like an appearance of it left, just like, you know, an insubstantial appearance of it. Or Rashi says another explanation of perchos means that her eyes are tearing up. So therefore, the tears wet the coil that's outside the eye, and therefore it prevents it from drying out, so it prevents it from being a chassid. Another case, suppose the woman, when she's toveling, opens her eyes more than normal, so like this, then you have a problem with chassidah, because now you have crevices, now you have folds and crevices in her upper eyelids. Or she closes her eyes tightly, then you also have a problem, because now you have folds, and now you have folds under her eyes. So therefore, then you have a chassidah, then the tefillah doesn't count. So therefore, it's
not much of a chassidah, the folds are not that.
Nevertheless, though, the fact is that you have to have that. It's not open too much or closed too much. Yeah, let's say she closed them very tightly. Yeah.
As opposed to walking in with her eyes open and then closing later. And then
well, right. I mean, if once she's in the mikveh, once she's toveled already, if then she does like. No, that's what we're saying. They don't have to be open.
They shouldn't be
tightly closed either. They should be normally closed. Like you have them closed when you're sleeping, I'd say.
What about if she wipes them before with water or anything like that?
I don't know if that helps. Maybe not. I don't know. Okay, Tosfos actually mentions in this connection that actually her mouth should be open based on the Gemara before, but the bone between the teeth or whatever. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is, again, her mouth doesn't have to be open. It can be closed, but not tightly closed. Again, it's just closed in the normal position, right? Now, Tosfos brings over here from Rabbeinu Hanano and from some manuscripts of the Gemara that says, that has a line, the less the halacha is not, in fact, like all of these teachings. And you have a machlokes rishonim, how far back is this talking about? Is this talking about all the dinim that we've been talking about rinsing out the folds of her body, for example? Are we only talking about some of the last couple of dinim, like, for example, about scabs and things like that? There are a few different opinions of rishonim. If we accept this girsa, so one second, so we have this girsa that the halacha is not like any of these things because they apply only for taras, but not as far as taras. Not as far as between her and her husband. Now, Tosfos brings that Rashi has a truva where he says we shouldn't have that in the Gemara. Because, among other things, we have a number of Amiroyim we were quoting before, Rav, Gidol, Rami Bachama, they all lived in Babel. What's the logic that they would be talking about Taris, which are only relevant in Eretz Yisrael? No, okay, truma, but even truma, you only have midrabanan, you have it in Babel, but also, for example, the fact that Tosfos says another, Rashi brings that another objection is if the whole thing is only as far as Taris, why mention it in terms of a woman when it comes to Taris? The same din applies when a man needs to talk
about
it. No, because if we're talking about as far as the dinim of the tevilah of a nidda, then it's relevant to talk about a woman. But if we're talking about tumah of a tara, then it should be mentioning about a man as well. So anyway, Rashi says that all of them are fully, all of these things are fully in effect, and you do need them for her to be tahor for her husband. So if she opens or closes her eyes too much, or if she doesn't rinse out the folds or whatever, then the tevilah is no good. Tosfos continues and says that no, Rabbeinu Tam does accept that girsa, and says that there's a difference between Taris and her husband. So in Shulchan Aruch, so first of all, you have, again, there's different opinions among the Rishonim. If we accept this girsa, how far back is it referring? Is it referring to all eight dinim that we were just talking about? Is it referring to only some of them? So in practice, what it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should be careful with all of them. If for whatever reason she was careless with some of them, then with some of them, if she should, ideally she should toivel again. But if with some of them, if the circumstances are, she can't total again for one reason or another, then with some of them we can be makal, like Rashi's shitta. So in particular, I think, for example, the one about scabs is one of them, the one about liflof, about the we can be makal in a pinch. Only the d'yevet, if you have, for example, if she didn't clean out liflof, shabayim, that we're talking about here, the filmy stuff in the eye,
yeah.
And she tovel, that now she doesn't, for whatever reason, she doesn't have an opportunity to tovel again, then we can be makel with some of these things.
So the scabs in the eyes.
I think the scabs in the eyes and one other one.
Oh, the hair.
But not necessarily, no, the hair is. Okay.
A little bit smaller,
wasn't bubble, right. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Omer Shlokish, ha'isha lo titbol elok derech gedilasa. When a woman tovels, she should be toveling in the body position of the normal way that a person grows. In other words, the normal body position that a person is in when they do their regular activity. Kiddiknan, like what we find in a mission. Well, what we mean is, in other words, not scrunched up or whatever, but wait, the point is like this. For example, let's say, for example, it means she shouldn't be pressing her arms against her sides, she shouldn't be pressing her legs together, et cetera. Yeah, because then you have a chazitza, exactly. But on the other hand, you have the other way around. We're also saying, for example, she doesn't have to spread her legs as wide as possible, and in fact, if she does, there might be a problem, because that creates new folds. And the same thing, for example, she doesn't necessarily have to have her arms all the way stretched out like this.
It doesn't create much.
It may, but it still creates some. But she should tovel derech gedilasa. Kizitznan, as we learn in a Mishnah. Okay, so Kizitznan, as we learn in a Mishnah in Negoyim, we talk about over there, suppose that a person has saras on their skin, and they have to come to the Koyin for an examination. Now, you have a concept when it comes to saras that places in the body that are hidden are not subject to the dinim of saras. So for example, let's say a person has saras inside their mouth or inside their nose or whatever, then it's not metame then. So what do we consider for this purpose to be the hidden and the not hidden areas? So the Mishnah says, ha'ish nira ka'oider, when a man presents himself and poses for the koyin, for him to check him, he poses like some, ka'oider means like somebody who's hoeing. He's hoeing, he's digging in the ground, like you dig around plants, or like when he's collecting olives. You have him, so Rashi explains that oider, hoeing, refers to the position of his armpit. So if he has saraf in his armpit, for example, he doesn't have to stand in front of the curtain like this with his arms above his head. Instead, he puts his arm in the position that he would as if he was hoeing the ground. So you have a little bit of the arm.
Hoeing
means taking a hoe, taking a, like a spade, and digging in the ground like you would around plants or whatever. It depends what the word that's digging. If you're trying to dig a hole or something, if you're digging like to aerate the air around plants, then you need
then you're doing like this, maybe sort of.
I don't know. So therefore, so he's holding his arm in a position sort of like this. So some of his armpit is exposed, some of it is not.
Most is not.
Okay, that's the point. And moisik zaysim, Rashi explains, would mean, suppose, for example, that a person is picking up olives off the ground. So again, he doesn't bend all the way down to the ground. He bends at the waist, and then he bends at the waist and bends down a bit, and then reaches with his hand to pick him up. That's the position he would be in if he had, let's say, he has a nega between his legs and in his groin, then that's the position he would stand in. Anything that's not visible when he's standing in that position is not subject to faras.
Not laying down.
So not laying down, he has to be standing up. Well, that's the point, in other words. So he's not standing straight up. He's not bent completely double like that. He's bent over like he would when he's picking midway, sort of. Right. Other Rishonim learn the other way around, actually. Other Rishonim learn that it means that the Rosh, for example, brings it the other way around. That means ka'oder means as far as the position of his legs. When a person is hoeing, he doesn't stand with his legs together, like when you're davening Shemoneh Esrei. You don't stand with them too far apart. You stand with them somewhat separated so you can brace yourself. No, that's the point. When you're standing there and hoeing.
Davening?
No, not like davening. I'm saying when you're standing there and hoeing, you're not standing like this.
No.
You're not standing like this. You're standing with your feet braced in a normal position apart. So that would be called. Your Moisik Zaysim would refer to picking olives off the tree where you have your hand extended upward, but again, not all the way up, but somewhat up. Okay. Isha Niris, the same way, when a woman has saraf and she needs to pose for the Koyin to check, she has to appear in the position Koyreges v'chiminikas b'na. When it comes to her armpit, she has to be in the position that she would be when she's weaving, where again, she has her arms somewhat up because she's doing the shuttle back and forth, but not all the way up. And mnikas b'na, and like the position that she's, and that's as far as if it's in her armpit. And that if she has to be, she has to be. I mean, the kohen has to check, same way as a doctor would have to check a woman. I don't know. It could be she just exposes the area that where that has to pass, and the kohen checks that. Could be she has to undress completely, whatever. It would be like a medical examination. I don't know. Anyway, mnikas b'na. And she also, another example would be if the suspected nega is in her beis ha'erva, then she has to bend over like the position she would be in when she nurses her baby. Where again, she's not bent double, but she's not standing up straight either. Yeah. Tosfos gives a different explanation. Also, k'minikas b'na refers to also that how much under the breast is exposed is, it would have to be in the position that her breast would be in when she's nursing. So when it was not hanging all the way down as it often is, and not straight up, but you know, in the position it would be when she's nursing.
Why can't you get away her of his dental and you could see it much better?
Because again, whatever is not visible when she's in these positions is not considered visible as far as Nagoya. But therefore, the same way when it comes to toiveling, these are the positions that we're talking about she has to be in. So in other words, according to most poskim, therefore, the result of this is when a woman is toiveling, same thing. She should be standing there, bending a little bit at the waist, not completely bent double, but bent somewhat over at the waist with her hands sort of like this, and toivel that way. With that said, though, it's brought in the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, who brings the description over there of how Rabbi Yaakov Landau, all of a sudden, was told by the Rebbe Rashab to construct a mikveh, and he mentions, and in the course of the discussion, he mentions something from the Tzemach Tzedek that the proper way to tovah would be lying down flat. So apparently he understands, or Gemara to be saying Koregis would be as far as her arms, or like this. El Chominikas, no, would be more like what Tosfos is saying as far as the under the breast. Right. Yeah. Okay, well, that's men is different. They don't have. Omer Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Here's another din as far as Chatzitza. Nima Achas Shura. If she has one hair on her head or body or whatever that is tied, that's nima the hair, kshura, that is tied, in other words, if there's a knot somewhere in the middle of it, chetzetzet, then it's a chetzetzet, because one hair that's tied like that is going to be, it's a very tight knot, and therefore it's a chetzetzet. Part of that hair is not exposed to the water. Sholosh ain't in chetzetzet, but if you have three hairs tied together like that, it's not a chetzetzet, because three hairs are not, you can't tie them together so tightly. If you have three hairs knotted together, it's not such a tight knot. What?
Lo mahadki.
They don't get so tightly together. Shtayim any idea. What about if two? He says, I don't know. Maybe two is going to make...
But one hair by itself is not also...
That the point is, you have it's doubled over and knotted. You have a knot somewhere in the middle of it. So that place where the knot is a very tight knot. And therefore...
It's much more with three.
With three, they don't stick together that much to be able to make... If you have three hairs, if you have three or more hairs that are bent over and made into a knot, it's not going to be such a tight knot. The nature of hair is that three hairs or more that are knotted together like that, it can't be such a tight knot. So there'll still be room for water to get into the knot.
And one hair knot?
One hair knot. And three, two, he's not sure.
Within the knot.
Within the knot itself, right. Rabbi Yechanan Amar, Onu Ein Lanu Ela Achas. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, we only have the din that when there's one tied, then there's a problem, not more than one.
So two
would be okay. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yitzchak says in this connection, Dvar Torah. Well, one second. Well, yes and no. I mean, we're going to talk about now the dinim. We're going to talk about now more dinim of Chafitza. There's Zaraita and then there's Zirabanan. But you also have actually in this connection, you have a Machlokas Rishonim. Like this, the Gemara is going to talk about now most of Ruboi versus Mi'otai. Does the hair count as something as a separate unit than the body? The Rambam brings from the Gaonim, for example, would say that yes. So for example, according to the Gaonim, if you had suppose that most of the hair on her head had knots like that. Each individual strand had a knot in the middle of it. If it was most of the hair of the head was that way, then the Gaonim say the tefillah would be possible, it would be considered a chapitza. The Rambam, on the other hand, holds that not. On a Doraisa level, at least, as we're going to say now, you have to have Roiv, that there's a Chatzitza, in order for it to be a Chatzitza. And the Rambam learns the hair is not a separate unit from the body in that. The hair, you would count. So only if the Chatzitza covers a majority of the surface area of the body, including the hair, only then would it be a Chatzitza.
According to the Rambam.
According to the Gaonim, the hair counts as a separate unit of the body. So in other words, according to them, as long as most of the hair has a Chatzitza, then it doesn't matter, even if the rest of the body doesn't, even though the hair is only a small part of the body. Okay.
Well, I mean, the hair covers the whole body.
No, we're talking about the hair of the head.
Amar
Rav Yitzchak, Dvar Torah. So Rav Yitzchak says like this. Mina Torah, the din is like this. Rubai ha-makbid olav chotzis. Only if you have something which covers the majority of the body, or according to the Goyim, Rashi also follows the opinion of the Goyim in this, that it means the majority of the hair. So let's say the majority of the hair was each individual strand had a knot in it, and you makbid on it, you object to it, and you don't like it, chotzis, then it would be a chotzis. Rubai ve'ene makbid olav, on a doraisa level. Well, if there's a roi, but you're not makbid, so she has, let's say, knots in the majority of her individual hairs, and she doesn't care about it, it wouldn't be a chatzitza. However, the gozru, the chachamim, made a gzera, al rubai she'ene makbid, where you have a majority of it, even if she's not makbid, it's still a chatzitza, mishum rubai ha-makbid, because it's easily confused with the case where it's roi that you are makbid. And also the gozru, on the ortei ha-makbid, b'shum rubai ha-makbid. They also made a gzera that even if it's a minority of the body or of the hair that has a chatzitza, but you object to it, it would still be a chatzitza even though it's not roiv. So in other words, midaraisi, you need both, roiv and makbid. Midirabanan, one or the other, is enough to make it a chatzitza. So midaraisa, again, following Rashi over here, and the goyim that the Rambam quotes, if, let's say, when it comes to the hair, counting the hair as a unit of its own, if most of her hair has knots in it, has knots in each individual strand, if she's makbid, then it would be a chatzitza d'oraisa. If she's not makbid, it would be only a chatzitza d'rabbanan. And if you have a minority of the hair has knots in it, mid'oraisa, it wouldn't be a chatzitza at all, even if makbid. Mid'rabbanan, if she's makbid, it would be.
When she made the chatzitza, she should have got rid of the...
Well, of the knots, that's true, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the question is, v'ligzo nami al mi'uto she'ene makbid, mishum mi'uto ha-makbid, why don't we also make a gzera that even if there's a mi'ut and she's not makbid, we should still make a gzera because it might be easily confused with a mi'ut that you are makbid? The answer is we can't do that. He's gufa gzera, because after all, that case itself is a gzera, v'anan nekum v'nigza gzera. We don't make a gzera on top of a gzera. We don't make a gzera to safeguard another gzera. So therefore, that's the way it remains. If it's a ruba, you're makbid, all of it's a chatzitza d'oraisa. If it's mi'ote and ene makbid olav, then it's not a chatzitza even d'rabbanon. And if it's one or the other middle cases, then it's a chatzitza d'rabbanon.
And not
d'oraisa.
So d'oraisa is only ruba and makbid.
Right. So that's what we were saying before at the beginning of the sugya, that this is why the Gemara explains in Baba Kama, this is why Ezra had to come up with the takana of chatzitza, because up until that point, you only had the din d'oraisa, that only if it's ruba you're makbid olav. So for that, you don't need a specific takana for chatzitza. Because you're not usually going to have something that covers the majority of the body or the majority of the hair and that you mask it on. But once they made the gzera that one or the other is enough to be a chatzitza, now you need chatzitza to make sure that there's not something that's a mute which you would be masked on. Achronim, by the way, talk about an interesting point. Once we say that if you mask it on and it's chotzitz, so then automatically, if you don't want it on there because it's going to be a chatzitza particular, automatically you're makbid, so it should be a chatzitza. So how do you ever have rubai she'en, how do you ever have something she'en in makbid all of?
And if he's makbid, what depends. It could be makbid on the mute and...
Well, but that's the question. If it's going to be a chatzitza, then we're saying you have to do chatzitza to get rid of it. Then so one of the answers is, one of the answers are Hanan Wasserman and some other achronim give the answer, if you only makbid on it because of the halacha, that's not considered makbid. Makbid olav would mean you'd object to it for other reasons.
Which other reasons?
For example, it's dirt on your skin which you don't like, let's say, or example. Omer Rav, nidav is mana ena tibelas ela balayla. Okay, Omer Rav, nidav is mana ena tibelas ela balayla. When a nida is tovling in the proper time, here we're going back to the original dinim of nida and zava, we have 7 days of nida and 11 days of zava. When a nida is toveling after the 7 days, ena tevelas ela balayla, says Rav, she can only be toveling at night. She's not allowed to tovel during the seventh day. V'shaloi bizmana, but if she's toveling later, for whatever reason, let's say she's toveling on the eighth day or later, tevelas bein b'yom min balayla, then she's allowed to tovel by day or by night. Rabbi Yechanan says no. Bein bizmana, bein shaloi bizmana, whether she is toveling by day, whether she's toveling on the seventh day or later, either way, ena tevelas ela balayla, either way, a nida is allowed to tovel only at night, mishum strach bita, because of the problem of the habit of her daughter. In other words, what's going to happen if a nida totals by day, let's say it's on the day of the eighth day, her daughter eventually is going to learn from her mother about the dinim of tarech mishpacha. She's not going to realize that her mother totaled on the eighth day during the day. She's going to think you're allowed to total during the day even on the seventh day, and that would be an isur kares, because then it would result in an isur kares. Because for a nida, only totaling after the night after the seventh night onwards is effective. If she totals any, forget about it, we're talking about a nida. So if she totals any time during the 7 days, no good. So therefore, Mishum Srach Bita, we're going to say, says Rabbi Yochanan, we never are going to allow her to tovel during the day on the eighth day, even if for whatever reason she had to delay the tevilah by a day, it still has to be at night.
Communicate and tell her I'm going during the day. Because,
yeah, let's say.
Maybe the daughter can say
but
maybe.
Also will think that you can do
that you can tovel during the day, and she's going to think even during the day on the 7th.
And she, we're talking about a case where she is what?
Let's just say she's toveling on the 8th during the day.
On the 8th.
Yeah. Maybe the daughter's the same age, they're all going to mix it together.
Maybe. But Af Rav Hodabay, and in fact, Rav actually changed his mind as well. The Omer of Chiyah Ba'ashi, Omer Rav, Nida bin Bismana, Ben Shalom Bismana, and Itabela Salaboyla, Mishum Srach Bitter. The Chiyah Ba'ashi quotes Rav as saying exactly the same thing as Rabbi Yechan. Even if she's toveling Shalom Bismana, she has to wait and only tovel at night. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and we'll talk about exceptions to that, but in general, that is the halacha.